hey, have you ever had a great idea and you just want to tell everyone about it, but you're running into a couple problems? Like, one, how do I tell everyone about my great idea? Or even, how do I even get this podcast off the ground? Let me tell you, I was in the same boat as you, kid. And honestly, Anchor is the one that helped me out. Anchor is your one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors, so you can get paid for the podcast you put out. So if you've always wanted to start a podcast and tell the world about this great idea of yours, go to anchor.fm/start and join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. That's anchor.fm/start, and I can't wait to hear your podcast. I kind of have an outline for this show. Also, it's the 4th of July. Happy birthday, America. Welcome to Designers Exchange. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of A Designer Exchange. Ben, I finally said the name of our podcast right for the very first time, and I didn't screw it up. My name's Josh.
And my name's Ben.
And you're listening to another episode of Got it right once,
and then you screwed it up.
How's it going, Ben?
Bruised my wrist the other day, so it's been fun using a computer mouse for the last 2 days.
I saw you sent me a picture, and I was like really confused. So what happened exactly?
I've been moving 3D printers around for a demo to high school kids. So I was taking it out of the car, putting it back where it came from. And as I lift it up, because these aren't your normal tables that are at like hip height. These are the ones that are like chest height for some stupid reason. Standing desks or whatever. Anyways, like they're not good standing desks. Like air quotes for that. Standing desks are good. These aren't. So I was putting it up there. One half decides to start falling, so I grab it with my right arm, but I don't. I smash the back of my hand into it. So whenever I like curl my fingers, it's painful. Very painful.
It's painful. Some would say it's painfully honest. No, just kidding. It's a YouTube channel. And I've always wanted to say that, like, ever. So now I'm really glad.
That makes no sense.
It's okay. We'll just ignore that.
You'll just link them later.
Exactly. Welcome, everyone. I already did the intro. I don't have to worry about that now. It's America's birthday. Happy 4th of July. Woo woo. Guns and explosive. Love it.
But Josh, how was your day?
Good. I worked 8 hours at Home Depot. I can officially say now I sold my very first design. We had a lady come in, and I've been working with her for the last couple weeks, and she was like at the lake, and she's like, all right, I'm ready to buy everything. And I was like, all right, let's get this show on the road then, and let's buy it. And so we purchased everything. It was just at around like 12,000 is where we finished at after taxes and discounts, and I was like super excited and happy. And Hal, the other designer, he was like, congrats, you sold something. Now go back to work and go do something else. And I was like, yes, sir. And it had like a little ball of like happiness inside, and then kind of like faded away and kept doing something else. But yeah, other than that, took a nap again, as always, because I always take naps.
But here's the real question. Were you able to get on the Samsung fridge the Skyrim Very Special Edition to work?
Okay, so at Home Depot, we have like demos of fridges. For people who don't know. And one of the fridges we have is that really awesome, like, $3,000 Samsung that has, like, a touchscreen, and it's always off. And I came into work today, and I saw it was on, and I was like, no way. I was like, all right, I have to go play Skyrim, a very special edition, which if you didn't watch E3, Bethesda kind of, like, made jokes at themselves about the fact that they literally release new additions to Skyrim and it just gets old, and so this one was like
on every single platform.
Like from Switch to the Xbox to PC to updating it with the Legendary Edition, they're like, you can play it now on Amazon Alexa, you can play it on your refrigerator. And I was like, no, you can't. Fun fact, you can play Skyrim, a very special edition, on the Alexa. I have played it. Can you play it on a refrigerator? Yes, you can. You have to download the Alexa app, and then basically it's still voice like it would be through your phone. It's not a physical touchscreen like it would be on like the Switch if you were to do it, which I was really disappointed. But if you download the Alexa app, also those things come pre-installed with Bixby, and oh, that's lame because Bixby sucks. But yeah, you can download Alexa and you can play Skyrim, a very special edition. It gets boring after about a half hour playing it. I played it for a couple hours. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Ben, plans for the 4th of July, America's birthday.
My plans were eat brats, and I accomplished that, so I feel accomplished.
Work had burgers and brats for lunch, and I was like, yeah. And I had like two or three burgers, and it was like delicious. And now I think I'm just going to make some pasta and watch a movie. Probably not a movie. Maybe not. I don't know. We'll watch something. I have I need to catch up on my new show I started watching on Netflix called Black Mirror, and I love it. Okay. So, yeah, it's exciting. Yeah, that's all I have for you guys. Ben, what happened this week? What's going on?
Tesla reached 5,000 cars a day.
Oh, I was so happy you said this because my heart warmed and I want a Tesla so badly. And the fact that Tesla acted on their promise.
Well, this promise, to be honest.
Well, I mean, they sent a car to space. When you're Elon Musk.
No, that was SpaceX. We got to get your company straight, Josh. Just because the same person is the CEO doesn't mean they're the same company.
That's fair.
Unlike Alphabet Inc.
So what does this mean now with Tesla? And am I going to start? And can I now buy a Tesla anywhere?
Well, no, you can. It's actually funny. There's a lot of weird little things with Tesla. So the fact that they reached 5,000 means that you'd think their stock would go up, but it went down 7%.
What?
Because why? Because of all these tariffs that are coming up this Friday. So on this Friday, all of the tariffs with other countries, price rises for goods from other countries. Yeah, they're all activating this Friday. So your microwave may get a little more expensive, or your Tesla may get a little more expensive because it costs them more to buy their resources.
Right. Explain to me what a tariff is, because I have an idea of what a tariff, but I want to make sure I fully understand what a tariff is.
It's basically adding a tax to people who import stuff into the country. It's meant to keep manufacturing in country. So if one company is really good at something in another country, say electronics China, electronics have a high tariff from China to try and encourage people to build them in the U.S. where they don't have that extra amount of money they have to pay all the time.
Gotcha. That makes sense. So Tesla stock went down because of tariffs. My microwave.
Yeah, basically every car company did. So.
Okay. That makes sense. If you can't hear, there's like fireworks going in the background, and I'm like really excited and happy because like America, freedom, but I'm also like, I'm recording a podcast. Can you please quiet your fun for like 1 hour?
This is like the 1 hour they're allowed to without the cops showing up. So
pretty much. Side note, I don't know if I told you this yet, Ben, but someone took a car and ran it into a window at our apartment. And it was the funniest thing I've ever watched. This woman was, our parking lot's like very narrow, and she's trying to turn around in it, and she like keeps backing up, and all of a sudden you hear this, like, if you had a vase or like a cabinet full of like china and you tipped it over, that's what it sounded like real quiet, and then you heard something, and then it just all fell and just like shattered a million pieces. Turns out the lady works for our apartment. And it's her first day. So
that double sucks.
Right? And so like she's having a panic attack and freaking out and like my roommate and I like see it and we're like, what the heck happened? And I go outside and she's just like in a fuss, in a fit, really mad. And like the window's like on the, it's in a basement apartment. And so she hits it and she's like, what do I do? What do I do? And I was like, well, don't ask me because I don't know what to exactly tell you, but like, you should call the landlord. And she's like, but I work for the landlord. And I was like, whoa, good luck. I'm just going to walk inside and walk out, wipe my hands clean of this situation. Like, not my problem anymore. And so, like they didn't care. Like, accidents happen. And, like, the apartment I live in is really old. And, like, the window probably needed to get fixed anyway. And so I was like, LOL. It's really funny. But that was just a side note. And I just remembered that after hearing fireworks for some reason. Let's see. What else happened, Ben?
Well, in San Francisco, you know, California, where everything happens, San Francisco has a new diner that has a robot that cooks your burgers instead of a human.
Perfect. Just what we need. Just what I wanted.
So this robot can completely assemble and cook your burger perfectly every time in just 5 minutes. And apparently it only costs $6. $6 for the burger.
So. Six bucks for a burger? That's fairly priced.
Yeah, but this is San Francisco and it's made by a robot. And it's perfect.
And it's San Francisco. So, like, right there, you have all of that. That's really cool, actually. Do we know what burger joint get it? Please don't be McDonald's.
It's a new restaurant made by the creators of the robot, which, funnily enough, is called Creator. Creator is the company. So Creator's storefront is located in San Francisco's SoMa neighborhood.
Okay. That's really cool, actually. The fact that you can... speaking of robots, Marcus Brownlee, MKBHD, just bought the Mia robot. And if you don't know what the Mia robot is... The Mia robot is a personal robot that you hook a camera up to, and if you hook, for instance, like a red weapon to it, it can basically do really complex shots of around objects. So like phones, tablets, when you see really cool commercials and they have that like camera rotating around it or like doing something funky.
Is it like a six-axis robot? So it's got six joints to it. Okay.
Yeah. And he showed it in one of his episodes of Dope Tech, and he thought it was like really cool, and it's like $30,000, and he's like, would I get this? I don't know. Maybe. And then like 6 months later, he's like, all right, I cave in, I bought it. And I was like, oh my word. And I'm like, stepping up a new level of like amazing like quality of production. Cause like that man, you can put that robot, if you stand in the right place, you can program it to go around you and get these perfect, smooth, like cinematic shots of a phone in your hand. And I'm just like, oh boy, that's hard to compete.
That makes me think of the commercial that Apple did for their iPhone Red, like some of the shots in that.
All those shots are probably done on like that style of robot. And I was just like, holy crap. Also, it reminds me of, I can't think of the movie, but like there was a movie where like, oh, it's Tony Stark and Iron Man, where he has that robot and it just kind of assists him and like doing whatever, and he just kind of yells at it. That's who I think of when I see that. I'm just like, Marcus Brownlee's gonna have like he's basically gonna put Siri or Google Assistant in his robot, and that thing's gonna be able to talk to him and make phone calls and just be a little assistant robot. And I'm just like, oh boy. 2018's a crazy one. So is this robot like publicly and commercially available, or?
I don't believe you can purchase it at this time, and technically the restaurant opens in September, but they had it open for a little bit for the public, for the press is what I mean, so that they could get the word out. Gotcha. But I don't believe you can buy it yet. But when you can, I don't know, there may be some McDonald's jobs going away.
I mean, we I can relate with kind of like in a sense of like Home Depot and self-checkout, and people always ask an older generation, they're always like, why don't you have people for cashiers? I want to talk to someone when I check out. And we're like, well, because when cashiers don't show up their job, and let's face it, no one wants to be a cashier and work at a dead-end job, the self-checkout will always still be there for you because it's not going anywhere. So the idea of having flipping burgers is not the most ideal thing to do. And the fact that I can now replace it with a robot and charge $6 a burger for it is crazy. Do you know how much the robot is? Is it like $1 million?
I'm not seeing a price, unfortunately.
Does it come with a Tesla? Like, that'd be cool.
No.
Buy a Tesla and get a robot cooking thing for the price of like $9.99. But wait, there's more. That's really cool, actually. The fact that this is where we're coming to now. And the fact that it's called Creator, that's also kind of cool. What else got for me? Hit me. I'm ready for the next one.
How about how Ford thought that a car powered by a nuclear reactor was a good thing at one point?
I think it's a great idea. What's the problem with it? Oh, wait. I can only think of like 1,000 reasons why this is a bad idea.
Cancer for one.
Yeah, for real. That might be the only reason that we need to like explain. Like, cancer, sir?
So, this was originally posted in the Jalopnik car website. And apparently, Ford built in 1958 a prototype. Well, no, not a prototype. They only showed a concept to everybody. But the car was called the Nucleon.
Okay.
Like, okay, that's a flashy name for a atomic powered car.
Yeah, I'm
so
sold.
Basically, it was a car with the bed length of like an old truck. So not one of your brand new trucks with a short bed, like really old trucks with really long beds for actually carrying stuff.
Oh my word.
Except the thing is, none of that space was usable because it was all dedicated in the middle to the nuclear reactor and everywhere around it to lead. To just not give people cancer if you just leaned on your own car.
Yeah, because you have to put the lead casing on that thing so you don't die of radiation.
It's either lead or water, so.
Yeah, and you can't use water, so you got to use lead. And that lead's not going to be like 2 millimeters thick. I mean, we're talking like what? Probably a foot thick to six
we're
inches?
We're talking a foot thick.
Yeah, I mean, oh, Ford. Ford. What were you thinking? Why is this up now, though?
They just posted it on Jalopnik, and I thought it was a good topic for the podcast.
Oh, okay. I thought they were like re-going back to the idea and be like, all right,
No.
Everyone would gather around like, we're running out of ideas.
So you heard about Tesla.
So
we got our own business plan.
Electric cars are not the future. What is the future? Nuclear power, because that makes more sense, kids.
So how the car would have worked is uranium fission, which is how most nuclear reactors these days work. In fact, all. I don't think there's one that can do nuclear fusion yet. Nuclear fission would heat the water around it, turning that to steam, turning a turbine, therefore generating either directly power to the wheels or generating electricity, which would be fed to the wheels. They say that it could travel 5,000 miles before it needed refueling, but imagine finding someone who's going to be able to refill your car with radioactive plutonium.
I could just see that in the local paper.
It's going to be a little bit tougher to find that than a gas station.
Help wanted. If you want to get paid wherever you want to get paid, we'll pay you. Oh, and by the way, you have to do something that probably will kill you in about a year or two. Want to apply? That's so funny.
So their plan was completely removing the radioactive nuclear tank on the back of it and dropping a brand new one in.
All right.
So imagine going in for your 5,000 mile oil checkup, but instead, like, 7/8 of your car's weight is lifted out and then a new one dropped in.
Yeah, because that water... Oh, my word. This just sounds like a bad idea. Like, I'm glad they never... I mean, obviously you can't do it, but I mean, we're talking... Do they have a price of what this would have cost them back then?
No. This is barely off the drawing boards.
Oh, it shouldn't have been on the drawing boards. Like, I'm not saying... There's no such thing as a bad design, but this was a bad design.
Speaking of design... posted on uxplanet.org, they list 6 common pitfalls when prototyping, and they're actually, it's a pretty good read.
All right, so what are these 6 common types or 6 common pitfalls when prototyping?
So the first one is prototyping without a purpose, which I mean, that one's pretty obvious. You're trying to make something and you're like, I don't know, we'll figure out what people will use it for later. Like,
that's True. Design with a purpose. Makes sense.
Yep. Like if you don't have a purpose, then it's going to be a lot of different things, and it's not going to... It's like you use a screwdriver for a screwdriver. You don't get a screwdriver, and on the other end is a crowbar and a hammer and some calipers and a lighter.
There you go. It's the
not unless
ultimate.
You're Swiss.
Exactly. Swiss, we're talking about you today. It's all your fault. Not the country. We love you. All of you people are wonderful.
We're talking about the cheese?
Cheese. Food. That sounds good right now. Second one. Hit me.
Second is focus on creating something that works.
Well, yeah. If it doesn't work, you're not like hitting that point.
So the product team often think about the goal of prototyping is creating like something that works, and you need something that works, but you don't need something that works for everything. It's like if you're creating a prototype for a brand new Tesla, you don't need to prototype every single system in the car. You need to just get the engine down or get the battery down. Don't go for them all at once.
So let's use a good example. So you and I had, remember when I needed to mount my spotlights in my studio?
Yep.
So I came to you with a real basic, I mean, we're talking like chicken bone and scratch as I kind of gave to you. And I was like, all right, here's my idea. Here's what I have.
Gave me a square with a tube in it.
I started somewhere. I had to start somewhere with something. And you looked at it and you were just like, oh boy, child, we're gonna fix this. We're gonna make this better. We're just gonna fix this. And after...
But to be fair to you, it worked.
True. And I knew exactly what I wanted. And I'm like, I know this will work. I just need someone to help me with it. And you took it. You took it to... What did you use? You use Python or did you use Rhino?
I don't want to dignify that with an answer since Python is a programming language.
Okay, well, I don't know these things, Ben. That's why you just kind of tell me it and I just go, yeah. But it was Rhino, wasn't it?
Nope, I used a program from Autodesk called Fusion 360.
That's what it was.
To describe Fusion 360 as anything smaller than a trash can should be made in Fusion 360. It's really good for assemblies, and it's got a lot of both computer-aided manufacturing and some 3D printing stuff built into it. So it's really good for these new workflows.
Right. So I mean, doing that design with a purpose, I needed a way to mount these lights, and we designed and then focused on creating something that actually worked. We went through several iterations with that, with wanting the base to rotate so that way the light could actually rotate and turn. And then finally we're like, nope, it just needs to hold the light. That's the main purpose. Anything else is fine, but like right now let's get the bare bones of what it needs to do. Mm-hmm. And I now have 3 lights, and you're actually currently, well, you're kind of working on my next one, which is mounting my camera to my ceiling, just because I don't have the floor space for a tripod on the thing. So we're mounting the tripod upside down and on the ceiling. And I think that's gonna work really well just for the space we're using. All right, what's my next pitfall for prototyping?
The third one is diving headfirst into the first good idea. Almost never is the first idea the best idea.
Yeah, like that chicken scratch drawing. Definitely not a good idea. Fourth one?
Falling in love with your prototype. Because I can tell you from an architecture world, if you think that your building is going to look exactly like you drew it, it's not.
Nope.
It's not.
You're going to run into problems and things, and
the material's going to have to change. You won't get the right shade of red.
Correct. Everything. It's not a. We don't live in a perfect world, and therefore, your first prototype is not going to be perfect. Like through and through.
Number five, selecting the wrong fidelity for a prototype. And that just means the wrong level of detail. So when creating a house, if you start at the finest level of detail where you start figuring out exactly which faucets you're going to use for the house, you probably shouldn't start with that.
No, if you don't have the flooring picked out, like, okay, so I'll use my bathroom as an example. So it's a fairly large bathroom, and so it just has a tub, and she wanted to put a soaking tub and then a shower in it as well. And it has the room to do it. And we're like, I'm trying to like figure out how to make everything fit and make sure it fits within like reason. And Home Depot doesn't have to abide by code, technically. You would give this to a contractor, and then the contractor would make sure it abides by code. And if it doesn't, they would fix it. But if you're doing it by yourself, you know, technically, as long as it's under like some square footage or some law, you don't need a permit and you'll be all good. Lolly dolly da. And like we get to like this first rendition of it, and I don't really like the way it looks. It's not like fitting, nothing works, and she's loving it. And I mean, I haven't even finished the first sketching of a drawing, and that woman is already looking to buy lighting fixtures and faucets. And I was like, whoa. I was like, hold on. We haven't even picked out wall coloring or cabinets yet. Like, you cannot pick out faucets until we've got that. So, totally understanding.
Or at least arrange the cabinets.
Yeah, I mean, and it was funny too, because she wanted brushed nickel for the faucet. And I was like, okay, but then she wanted like a white cabinet, and I was like, this isn't gonna fully work, so let's take two steps back and let's reevaluate the situation. And like, that's one thing, learning from a student and then actually learning with a client. Like, you only can learn so much as a student because you are the client and you are the designer. But then when you get into that like position of design, you now have to work with someone else's ideas and someone else's like trains of thoughts and things like that. So that was very difficult for me to like learn, but overall was handled fairly well. What's our last pitfall?
The sixth, and what I think you would consider one of the biggest, is ignoring sketching.
Okay, so are we talking like renderings, like hand rendering versus computer rendering?
We're talking if you don't draw anything at all and you just start putting things on the computer and printing them out, you're probably not going to get a great looking prototype.
I think, like, okay, so let's transition that into from start to finish. How would you attack any like design project? Like, how would you attack it from like head to toe?
Well, I'm like real 3D basic. Printing myself. Yeah, I'm 3D printing myself a watch band, and okay. So to figure out how that's gonna work, I had to figure out how I wanted the links to go together. And sure, I could start going and modeling it in CAD, but that's going to take a long time. You're going to go through a lot of revisions. You're just going to keep trying things. Or you could sketch out 20 ideas on paper in no time at all.
Right. So we go from sketching, and then we go from where to where.
So then it's figuring out what size do you want everything to be, because sketches aren't supposed to be to scale, aren't supposed to be to size. So I have a calipers, or you can use a ruler. Figure out what size you want things to be. Like, if you have an existing watch face, you have to figure out how it's going to connect to that, what that size is, and then you start with that measurement. And then I go into a computer program and start drawing out all those dimensions that I need.
Okay. And then when you're rendering, do you hand render that or do you computer render that?
I do computer rendering if I ever need to render anything.
Okay. And I think when looking at design work, I think around the same principle, you start with, you know, your ideas, your, you know, again, I'll use the bathroom as an example because it's my most recent project. It's actually my only like real project, but we'll use it as an example. And so, you know, I'm giving a simple floor plan where everything's originally at, and it's like, okay, how do I keep everything within the same, like, where everything's at? So making sure, you know, the soil stack is in the same position, you know, water lines are kind of in the same position, so we're not having to, you know, repipe everything and remove everything because it's more time and more money for that. And then just making everything fit. And so going through different renditions of sketching and, you know, real basic, like, you know, diagramming of where things go, and then taking actual measurements and going, okay, let's input these now into a program. And then finally getting all done with that, it's like, all right, now let's give the client or yourself even a prototype of a rendering. And that's usually with computer rendering. You can do hand rendering, but I just don't see the need to hand render. I think there's a difference from sketching out basic designs to actually doing hand renderings. And I know they push that.
I watch a YouTuber. I forget his name off the top of my head. I'll go look it up here.
Is it?
But he's a design student, product design student at the University of Australia.
Okay.
And one of the basic skills that they have to learn is hand rendering, hand sketching.
Right.
And I mean, it's what he can draw is really good, but he's moved on from hand sketching on paper to hand sketching in a program like Autodesk Sketchbook on an iPad.
Okay.
So he'll take his design and then he'll add color, he'll add lighting to it by hand in Sketchbook.
Okay, that's interesting. So he prefers the hand rendering method over the computer rendering.
I don't think that he has had much actual exposure to full-on computer rendering, like using a really high-end program like 3ds Max to render, or Blender to render out a final three-dimensional image. Most of the stuff that he works with is he hand draws a prototype and then he hand renders it right off the bat. This isn't something where he's rendering a final finished image.
Right. I think hand rendering is a cool technique. I think it's a cool skill to have, and I think there's, you know, there's always a dime in a dozen of, you know, people who can render computer rendering and people who have Photoshop skills, and, you know, you're always continually refining that skill, and it's pretty easy to find people who know Photoshop and ask questions. But when it comes to hand rendering, I mean, those are, you know, a diamond and a rough. And if you can get someone who's really good at it, you know, there's people even in the program when we were in that were, you know, diamonds in the rough for, was it for, you know, hand renderings. And I think it's a really cool skill to have. And I definitely think you should always refine a great skill you own, whether that's hand rendering, whether that's computer rendering, whether that's graphical design, or, you know, cooking, or, you know, streaming, or anything like that. I think it's, you know, important to refine and sharpen those skills. But as a designer, your main priority and your main focus is computer rendering. It's how fast I can get a rendering out as quickly as possible to a client. And it's faster to render in, we're going to use Revit as an example, because Revit has a built-in rendering software and it does pretty good for what you're, what you need to do, or even Lumion for an example, on the ability to import a import a model, render it in about a couple hours, and then shove it out to a client being like, hey, this is what your building's going to kind of look like. It can change, but here's where we're kind of sitting at. Versus paying an intern or whoever X amount of dollars an hour to color and really get a nice, like, it'll look really cool, but it's no longer a rendering. It's almost an art piece at that point. Like, you start to tip on that scale of art piece over design render. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And the channel name is Myron.
Okay.
And he is at the Australian University of Technology.
I will drop that in the show notes and in the description for anyone that wants to check that out. That's interesting. I'm currently like just looking at some of his like just stuff right here, and it's interesting to see just a student, like just someone young. I mean, this kid can't be more than what, 17 or 18, 19, 20 years old.
Yeah, but aren't we?
Well, I'm 22. Look what I'm doing in my life. But the fact, like, someone this young, and that's what I really like about YouTube in general, is the ability to mass put out your ideas, mass put out your, you know, your skill or whatever you want to do to the public, and get as many eyeballs on it as possible. Which I guess you could transition into, oh my word, oh, that scared the crap out of me. I had a light shine in my room from the firework, and I thought it was a cat in my room, and I jumped, and I was like, why is there a cat in my room? And I'm like, it's not a cat, Josh, it's light, stop being a baby. What was I talking about now?
I have no idea.
That's okay. The ability to mass put out ideas to YouTube versus, you know, any other platform really is, you know, really nice. And that's probably one of the big reasons why I, you know, hopped on the YouTube train, like a lot of people have. Do you want to talk about, like, your favorite computer rendering, or your, like, what's your favorite way of rendering out a building or a material or anything?
I don't really have a preference at this time.
That's fair. How many computer rendering programs do you know or have a basic understanding of? If you were, like, could you name them for all of us?
I could name 6 of them. Blender, Maya, 3ds Max, Revit's rendering system, the rendering system that comes with Rhino, and V-Ray, a plugin for literally all of them.
I was just gonna say V-Ray is probably the one that I think probably looks the nicest, but I think Revit and Rhino's built-in rendering, even Lumion, but that's more for landscape architects than it is for actual architects, really to walk in or be able to render like that. Yeah, that's about it. That's computer rendering for you kids. Where do you think design is going now? Like, where do you think we're heading with design, whether that's computer rendering or hand rendering, or where do you think that idea is heading towards?
We're moving into generative design. So Fusion 360 just got a new feature called generative design, and what it does is you put in where your loads are coming from, where your anchor points are, what types of forces they are, be them rotary forces or straight on loads, and it will take those all and fill it in with a bunch of basically meshes, and it will slowly remove meshes and keep testing the functional strength of the part. And say if you wanted something really low weight, it would test for that too, and it'll give you back a bunch of different ideas. The example they used in their video is a race car chassis. Well, not a chassis, just like the foot pedal. The foot pedal alone was made out of, I believe they said, 16 different parts, and was assembled with CNC machines, 3D printing, injection molding. Took a lot of stuff to make it, and they were able to reduce the weight by 2/3, make it all in a 3D printer, a metal 3D printer, mind you, and still have it cost less overall than the original foot pedal.
That's crazy. I think it's crazy where 3D printers have come from, and that gives me a lot of hope and like really looking forward to see where like AR and VR go as a technology. Because when 3D printing first came out, I remember that coming out in like high school, like eighth grade, freshman year of high school. And that was what, for like 8 years ago, 10 years ago. And that was like real basic, like just being able to 3D print parts.
MakerBot cupcake.
Yep. And then now we're printing wood, right? We're printing metal. We're printing different grades of plastic.
Yep. Some of the fun things we can print these days are actual steel, thanks to magnets. I don't believe there's a really good aluminum printer yet, but you can use stereolithography, which is laying down powder and zapping it with a laser to make it melt to make aluminum prints. And then you can do nylon, you can do fiberglass, and like you just mentioned, possibly even wood fibers. I recently found a research paper that took literally industrial byproducts, such as chloroform. That's that puts you to sleep.
No, I definitely think we could use chloroform. I definitely think like we would just use chloroform to like hijack people, and then they would like run our machines. I feel like this is a good idea, Ben. Like we've got a new business model here. Like we would use chloroform instead of like ABS plastic. Like we've got something here.
You can't print with it. Anywho, you can use industrial byproducts, including cellulose and chitin, which are binding products, basically natural polymers from trees and animals. And you can use those byproducts along with some acids to create, I don't want to say a slurry, like a thick paste that when dried has the same properties as, say, between basswood and balsa wood. It's really light, but you can still sand it down. You can drill it with your normal drill bits. You can cut it with a table saw. It's really awesome.
I think the ability to like 3D print anything, whether you're 3D printing your entire house and it's like a real basic like 1 to 200 scale or like 1 to, you know, 80 scale. Happy 4th of July, everyone. We love you. The ability to 3D print and just build something and then like look at it and then like physically look at this model or even use that 3D printer, like for instance what we did with the lights, to print a mounting bracket that doesn't exist, or if it does, I have to jerry-rig this metal piece and cost something, but instead I can just give you a basic design, we can draw it up, and then we can be able to create something and then actually use it. And now, you know, I think 3D printers now are getting to a point of being able to be put in homes at a rare or a reasonable cost, because MakerBots are costing what now? What's the going price?
MakerBots start at $1,800 basically.
Right. And we're talking,
these are your apples of 3D printers.
Right.
If you want an Android or maybe a Linux of a 3D printer, I can get you a printer for literally $200. Creality Ender 3D, if you're interested.
Cool. And if you're looking to buy one, Mom, I now know what I want for Christmas now. No, that's really good.
I thought you wanted 15 graphics cards.
Mom, put it on the list. You heard it here. I want 15 graphics cards, and I want a 3D printer. You know, I feel like every episode now, I'm just going to ask. I'm going to be like, that's what I want for Christmas. And I'm going to make a list. And Mom's going to look at it, and she's going to be like, you're not getting that.
So this whole thing is just an elaborate way for you to get a Christmas wish list put together.
Yeah, because I'm always bad at putting a Christmas list put together. So this is perfect. So every episode now, I just like find one thing and I'm like, yeah, I want that. That works. Tesla, sponsor us and send us a car, please. Thanks. You guys are the best. Well, I think everyone's celebrating 4th of July, and I think I might go have a beer or two with my neighbors, so I think I'm going to call that a wrap on that. Thank you again, everyone, for tuning in to a Designer's Exchange. I got the name right. Didn't screw it up this time. Boom, boom.
Don't jinx it.
I know, right? Anywho, my name's Josh.
And I'm Ben.
All right, and that's a wrap. Wait. Okay, hold on. Everyone, chill out. I have one more thing to say. I forgot to say this at the end. Now is the end. We have a special guest coming on. Paul Grossclose from... He's not from a TV show. And he's not, like, super famous. But he makes YouTube videos, so that counts. Anywho, Paul is guest starring on next week's episode. So tune in, share it with your friends. Yeah. Okay, that's it. Go celebrate America's birthday. Bye.